Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery. You know I need someone.
When I was younger, so much younger than today. Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. We're so glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio at his home studio facing the beautiful lake, a man who does not enjoy the unsolicited opinions of strangers or acquaintances, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Absolutely right on all counts, Billy. How are you?
I am so good, and we are staring down the barrel of the end of summer. You've had a good summer, haven't you? A lot of golf?
I've had a great summer. The problem is the water is so low on the lake, my boat's stuck. And I'm requesting prayers from everyone. It's a high-level problem. I love summer, but fall's great too, Bill. And then we got hockey after that.
Yeah, October hockey. And Ryan's looking at me like, yep, we got hockey. Of course, he loves all sports. Ryan, tell us about what sport you kind of lean towards the most.
College hoops is my favorite, but fall is my favorite time of year. When you have baseball season ending, football starting, hockey, basketball around the corner, it just all converges.
All converges.
Yeah.
George, don't you wish we had that smooth, melodic voice that Ryan has?
Of course I do.
Yeah. But we have what we have. All right. Let's talk about the show tonight. We've got a great show coming up. Billy Ballinger. What a great name, by the way. He's going to be joining us. And he's got a story which started very young and ended up with some time in the corrections system, the system of Department of Corrections. That's what I wanted to say.
Billy Ballinger sounds like a no-fielding, power-hitting third baseman for the Cubs. Doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does. So we're going to hear his story. I think you're going to be quite stunned at what you hear and the way God's worked in his life. I love stories of transformation. I love stories where God takes someone's life that's in the pit and redeems it. And I think we're going to hear a couple of stories tonight. I think he's going to talk a little bit about his wife as well. That's what the plan is, George. But let's get started with the show tonight. First of all, welcome everybody. So nice that people are listening to Real Recovery. Maybe you were referred by someone and they said, you should listen to that program. You might get something out of it. Well, welcome if you are that person. We're really glad that you're listening. And if you have sent this program out to other friends or acquaintances or family members because you know that they struggle with an addiction and you don't quite know what to say to them, but maybe if George and Bill will talk, they might learn something or understand something about God and his powerful love and grace. That would be wonderful too. So thank you for participating in whatever way you do to grow the kingdom of God. That's the whole purpose of Real Recovery. We want people to get free from addiction, get sober from drugs and alcohol, but most of all, we want them to come to saving faith in Christ.
Absolutely. Do we have any time left? We do a step every week, Bill. And for those of you that don't listen to our program, it's not the importance of the step. What it does is help us get closer to Christ. And tonight we're looking at step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And I wanted to focus, like you, Bill, I go to a treatment center every week to work with guys. And guys are always asking me, they don't know what they're going to do when they get out. They don't know what they want to do. Mm-hmm. They want to stay sober. They want to keep walking with God. But they don't know how that looks like. And they get pretty anxious about that. And I know you can relate to that with your guys. And I always tell them, God knows. I think we need to really emphasize that it's God's will for us, not our will for God. And we get that confused, like God is our insurance man, our lawyer, our fund director. And the whole reason he gets us sober is to work for him. And I'm hoping in the story tonight, it's God's story, not our story, but God's story in our life. And what he does is enable us to be his hands and feet. And when we look back on our story in our life of what God did, God sends his representatives to us. And Bill, one of the things I've gotten out of our friendship is you always tell me to look for godly appointments, that if God is sovereign, which he is, everybody who shows up, he allows. And look for the reason for that. And when we do that, we're going to see a lot of things that God's way of being anonymous is called a coincidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we pray in the morning, I encourage you to pray for sobriety, everybody, if you're in recovery. And God, what would you have me do today? I've got a good friend, Ed, who talks about being on team sober. But I also want to remember that I'm on God's team. And I don't have the playbook. He does. I get to read it. But what does he have for me to do today? And when you go out of the house with that, looking for what God has for you to do. And really where we go, Bill, is where if we're making spiritual progress, our sanctification to be more holy, we've gone really from doing bad things. So it's not avoiding bad behaviors. It's looking for opportunities to be good. It's not worrying about the sins we commit. It's worrying about the sins of omission, of things that I could have done and I didn't do. It's a different mindset. And I think where we get into trouble and we backslide is we start thinking about me, me, me. What can I do for me rather than what can I do for God? And how that really plays out is what can you do for others? I think it's the book of 1 John, Bill, that says we can't say that we love the God who we can't see when we don't love a brother that we can see. And so God has enabled us to get sober, be saved, work on our sanctification so we can help other people find him. And we're kind of his agents. We're his guys on his team to go out and help people. And that's what I think this step, this part that I want to focus on, Bill.
George, I love in step 11 where it says sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. I am always quick to say that if you struggle with prayer, you're in really good company. Some people are intimidated by prayer. They don't know how to pray. They don't know how long they should pray, what they should say when they pray. So I want to cut people a lot of slack. What God looks at is your heart. When you go to him and say, whatever it is on your heart, Lord, I need help with this. You can just speak to him the way you would speak to one of your friends because he cares about you and he knows your heart. And the more time you spend having dialogue with God, just talking to him and listening, open the book of Psalms and just start reading Psalms out loud and say, I am praising God through these Psalms. I am praying out to God as I read these Psalms. These are the desires of my heart to worship and adore God. And that time of prayer and scripture praying and reading and meditation will, in fact, improve your conscious contact with God.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, one of my favorite prayers when I first got sober was help. And I think having a dialogue with God all day, Philip Yancey wrote a book on prayer, Bill. And one of the things, I believe it was this book that he said, is a father likes to hear from his kids. And that always stuck with me. It's not super theological.
Yeah.
It's relational.
I love it, George. Let's bring on Billy. We'll take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we'll be right back. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying.
You can get it wrong and still think that it's all right. You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We got Ryan on the board tonight, doing as good as always. And tonight, our special guest is Billy Ballinger. We're going to bring him on in just a minute. George, you've always said that the Department of Corrections is often one of the best evangelistic tools out there.
I've said it is the best.
Okay.
And you get time to really think about your life.
And here you go correcting me already. And that bugs me a little.
Good. Yeah. That makes my day. Yeah, I think it's the people that work there have a real ministry.
I do too.
And it it gets your attention.
Yeah.
And a lot of good things come out of it.
Our guest tonight, Billy Ballinger, has got quite a story, and we're going to learn all about it starting right now. Billy, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. So glad to be on with you.
Yeah.
And just shout out to all your listeners. I heard you say something about the Department of Corrections, so you got me listening now.
Cool. Well, we want to hear about a young Billy Ballinger. Tell us about your childhood. I know that it had some difficulties.
Yes, I had, I was thankfully adopted at age 3 by my aunt and my uncle. My young biological parents just struggled, like I later struggled as a young teen parent. And, I just really struggled a lot as a young kid for some reason to fit in. Couldn't really figure out why. I didn't know if it was personality or what it was, but really just wanted some friends. Basically, it's that simple. Just wanted to have some community and friends. And we moved around a lot. My adoptive parents got divorced when I was by the age 10, but I was one of those kids who wanted to have a lot of friends, but I was really hyper and stuff. And it seemed like that, I was also the kid getting chased home from school by the bully. And that seemed to happen a lot. It wasn't just one of those off and on things every now and then. It just seemed to happen every single town I went to. And of course, when you're a little kid and you have that happening a lot, you start looking at yourself a lot, thinking, what is wrong with me? Those kinds of things. And so that later ended up causing me to figure out other ways to fit in. And so, you know, by a young teenager, I'm getting in trouble. I'm running away from home, running from my adoptive parents had gotten a divorce. So they remarried. So I'm running from this family to that family and then to my grandparents' house, and grades are not doing well in school. I'm not fitting in there, getting in fights and involved in some violence and things like that. But there's one special thing that happened to me as a 10-year-old I want to point out real quick. And it's interesting because you come back to these things later and you look at that and you see that there was something miraculous happening when you were little. And so when I was 10 years old, I started going to the Baptist church in Taylorsville, Indiana. They'd pick us up with the blue bus every Sunday, take us down there. My parents did not go, but I went. And one day they took us to a fire station where they took out all the fire trucks. They set up a stage, a bunch of chairs, and brought us kids down there. And the guy got on the stage and he preached about Jesus. And as the first time I ever can really remember just knowing, not really knowing what I was feeling right then, but I just had a sense this must be God. And they asked if anybody wanted to ask Jesus into their heart. And so I waited till everybody, I didn't raise my hand then. I didn't want to go up to the front. I was watching everybody else do it, though. I didn't want any little girls to see me raising my hand. So I waited till everybody got on the bus. And I can remember literally when everybody got on that bus, I waited. I was out kicking rocks in the driveway at that fire station. And I literally walked up to that preacher and grabbed him by his jacket and said, hey, I want to do what you said in there. And he prayed with me. And within a few weeks, I was baptized. So I think that, you know, God had begun to really work and stir my heart as a young kid, but, you know, I didn't have anybody really encouraging me to get in the Word and try to change my mind about the world. I was in this young youth struggle, trying to be somebody, trying to find community. I was not finding it. And thankfully, I did not take my life. Somebody must have been praying for me somewhere, because it was just really hard to feel like I belonged anywhere.
Billy, when you were in high school, what crowd did you gravitate towards?
You know, it was interesting. I just, the God's honest truth about when I was in high school, I was just trying to find any crowd that I could fit into. But because of the running away, that got me put into foster care for a short time, then got me sent to a place called White's Residential and Family Services while I was still high school age. And they had a school system there. And White's was like a precursor to like prison or a child, boy school. And so I got sent there and I was there for 15 months. Now that they were founded by Christians like 150 years ago and founded by the Quaker church, the Friends Church. And so that's where I went. And that's where I spent, you know, freshman, sophomore, my time in the school. So really, I guess you could say I was just gravitating to try to fit in somewhere. When I got locked up as a juvenile at that place, again, I was just trying the same thing. I had saw a lot of the same struggles in there, but thankfully there was a lot of Christian influence around me. People encouraging you. They're always encouraging the young people to make the right choices and So I started playing basketball, getting better at that, and made the team, those things, traveling around. And then I joined the choir. They had a chapel. They literally forced us to go to chapel. And now that I look back, I'm like, this is a really good thing that they did this. But they forced us to go to chapel. So we would march to chapel from our different cottages. That it was co-ed. So they had female and male on this campus. And you all lived in a house with about 20 other students. And you had house parents. And every day you would, in the morning, you would go to chapel. You'd go 5-6 days a week to this chapel. And I joined the choir. They had a choir that was co-ed. And I met a young lady there. And she was, her name's Jody. And she was there for 14 months. Now, the interesting thing is, I'm always trying to fit in. And remember, I was the kid that was running away. I was getting beat up. I was getting injured a lot because kids just loved to pick on me. And I couldn't figure out what the deal was. But when I got to White's and I joined this choir, I meet this young lady. We become boyfriend, girlfriend. That's Jody. And then we, next thing I know, I'm falling in love with her. But she comes from that rough crowd. She was those kids that would chase you home from school. She was the ones that lived on the street. She was involved in drugs at age 9 and just being on the street and moving a lot and didn't have a real stable home. But we fell in love with each other. And then we got released from that facility when I was 17 and she was 16. And from that point, it gets crazier, though, because what happened was is that now I'm in love with her. But my family back where I was from, I was still on probation. They would not take me to go see her. So I had to figure out ways to go see her. So I don't suggest anybody do this, but I just ran away. And when I got to her house, this was a totally different life than I was raised in. When I got to her house, her mom literally let me move in right then at age 17. I was a runaway. Jody was getting high all the time. She had the party crowd around her all the time. And what ended up happening is one day I had an altercation with somebody, a physical altercation, a violent fight situation. It was just a lot of the same that I experienced when I was growing up. But something snapped on the inside of me. And I guess people would say I went crazy. And all of a sudden, it was like I got a taste of this life of being accepted in a crowd that liked violence. And they accepted me, and her friends accepted me when I acted like that. So I became more violent, more and more violent. It got really, really serious. There were guns involved, stabbed. I was so many different things, almost lost my legs, where two cars, I'm between two cars and they ram into each other. I mean, violence, violence, violence. And Jody was wanting out of this life, but I'm wanting in because all I'm thinking about is reputation, friends, and acceptance. But she was raised into her life and she wanted out. We end up getting married at 17 and 18, and our daughter is born 5 months after we were married. And then we move out and move into our own play, our own apartments and things like that. And we finally landed in the spot where our house became the drug house, became the party house. And again, I wasn't somebody that was, people ask me what my addiction was. I got to tell you, we've lost a lot of people, as probably a lot of your listeners, to addiction. It's a major problem in our world right now. But it starts in many different places. And at that time, my biggest issue was, as I was addicted to people and I surround myself with violent people and I let them violent people around my baby girl in my home. And it became the party house. Next thing I know, a SWAT team raids my house at 2 in the afternoon, fully dressed in black from head to toe, black ski masks, black 12 gauge pump shotguns. And here's this young man, 17, 18, 18 years old. But I was that same kid who at 10 years old had accepted Jesus, but I just didn't walk with him. And I didn't have, I didn't have anybody around me encouraging me to do so. And I just went the wrong direction. And it almost cost me my life. But I was, of course, arrested that day. And my daughter was taken from my wife and I. And my wife was arrested that day.
Wow. Billy, I have to say that... The SWAT team showed up at your house because they were suspecting drugs or?
Yes.
What? Yeah, so, they were led to your house. I mean, yeah.
You know, that what goes with that scene, that crowd is like, you're involved in anything and everything you can be. Again, mine, nobody knew this. I can still go back to that town, and I have somewhat of a, that's nothing to brag about, somewhat of a reputation. It's given me some sphere of influence in that crowd, but they thought I was harder than I was. Okay, so let me just tell you, in my heart was a very sensitive heart, a soft-hearted young man who just, I like to say it like this, I didn't get to be bad for very long. Mm. And, but Jody was in it her whole life. She's written a book about it. It's just, I look at her and go, how'd you come out of that? It's miraculous, you know? But anyway, so I'm there. Yeah. What had happened was, is there was a drug war going on, a small one, not nothing really major. It was in Muncie, Indiana, which for years used to be called Little Chicago. So on the south side, and a lot of violence, a lot of drugs, a lot of partying, these kind of things going on, and involved a lot of very young people. And so a friend of mine had stolen some drugs. He'd stolen some cash, stolen a pistol, a 9mm pistol. And since he was a friend of mine, I got involved in it. So it's just going back and forth. There's shootings going on. Somebody got hit by a car. All kinds of things like this. My wife and my little girl sitting on the porch one night. Somebody comes by and just shoots right over top of their head. Things like this, which resulted in more violence with more physical altercations. And the police in the news article, they just said, we're shutting this down. So what they did was they just raided everybody. They just arrested everybody they could. They raided my house. Now, my house at 2 in the afternoon. The crazy thing was, is I had just worked half a day on a brand new job that day, just out cutting trees with a guy. I got high on the way home. I'm only home. We worked half a day. Of course, the weather was bad, so we couldn't work in the trees. Came home, get high with how crazy is this? With my little girl, my little 9-month-old little baby baby in the same room. If I'm getting high, she's getting high. You know, it's just a terrible life that we're just going down the tubes very quickly. My wife was in that room, myself, my little baby girl, another gentleman, and two girls skipping school. And then I decided I'm going to go take a bath. We didn't even have a shower in this little shotgun house we lived in. And I run the bath water. I go to take a bath. And as soon as I get down in the water, I hear this ramming sound up against my door. I'm thinking immediately that it's drug dealers busting in my house. So all of a sudden I hear take cover and I realize it's the police. So they came in, they fully dressed in black from head to toe, black ski mask, black 12 gauge pump shotguns. They came in. I jumped up out of that water, put my pants on real quick. They came in right that time when I got my pants on, just at the same time, the bathroom door comes flying open. The 12 gauge pump shotgun goes up against my head. And then they took me out, put me on the kitchen floor, read me my rights. And the crazy thing was, it took me through the house. At that time, they had not arrested Jody yet. She was still holding our baby girl. And if you can imagine, here is two young parents that really did love and do love, of course. But at that time, we loved our little girl. We're just being stupid. Like, we made sure she was fed and all those kinds of things. But I had a flow of known felons in and out of my home.
Whoa.
And the reason that happened was because reputation.
Yeah. Oh.
Piece of identity.
Yeah. Billy, I'm a little out of breath, and we need to take a break. So I need to get a breath, catch a breath, and also take a break. So you're listening to Real Recovery. Our special guest is Billy Ballinger. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place.
All right, we're back. Real Recovery, Bill and George. George, good thing we had a break there because I needed to take a couple of deep breaths.
Yeah, let's get back to it.
Yeah, Billy, when you were right before we went to break, there was some police intervention in your home, to say the least.
Yeah, craziness is, like I said, I was in the bathtub when they came in. So, you know,
and high, right?
Yes. And I can remember right before I got down in the water, I don't tell this part much, but I remember when I got in there, I heard the dogs barking like crazy in my backyard. And it's 2 in the afternoon. And I remember just kind of looking through the curtain at that bathroom window and looking out, and I saw a cat out there. And I thought, well, this is why the dogs are barking. And just as soon as I got down in that water, I heard that noise just wham, wham, wham. And like I said, the bathroom door comes flying open. The 12-gauge pump shotgun goes up against my head. But the crazy thing was, is when they took me out of that bathroom, they actually put me on the kitchen floor on top of this glass. It was everywhere. They broken in. And I recently aired a short kind of documentary of that house. I went back and did a walkthrough of that actual house. And, but, you know, I remember them taking me through the little house there into the front porch. And the weather that day was fitting for the craziness that just is happening right now. Because here's this guy who had an opportunity to follow Jesus from a little kid, but didn't have a lot of breaks in his life. And the same goes for Jody, my wife. And I just think here, you know, everybody's got purpose. Everybody's got plans, but we just didn't know it. If we would have known what was inside of us, what God could do with our lives, just, you know, and that he could rescue us from that life, we'd have went that way. Because truly in my heart, I was a soft-hearted person. I just become hard on the outside. It was all image. And I can remember standing on that front porch and Jody is holding our little girl and she's crying. There's lots of detectives. They got my whole street blocked off. In fact, when I was on the front porch, I watched them raid my next door neighbor's house. And I'm in handcuffs with these blue jean cutoff shorts on, long stringy hair. And if I had any hope, it was shattered, gone at that moment. Because I ain't got no money. I don't have anything. At that time, it had gotten so bad with me so quickly. This is kind of hard to believe. But I don't really share this too much, but I'm on the streets. All I would wear at that time, this is, you know, it's interesting. When you start being dark on the inside, it affects you on the outside. And I wouldn't wear a shirt. I wore a black leather jacket, usually shorts, no shoes, and long hair. Didn't ever comb my hair or anything like that. All I wanted to do was party, be wild, and it was just going down the tubes real quick. But anyway, that day they arrested me, arrested Jody. And part of Jody's story is that when they arrested her, I remember them asking her right in front of me. They asked her some very important information, but I had already told her, don't give them any information. Don't tell them this. In fact, here's a fake name, because they ended up finding a lot of stolen property in my home that I bought. And so, and they charged us with that. And I gave her a name to use, and she used that name, and they just looked at her and said, ma'am, you're under arrest. And they took my daughter right out of her arms. But when they took my daughter out of her arms, they handed her to a detective. And this man looked at Jody and he said, Jody, I told you, I kept telling you. And what he meant was, is I later heard the whole story. I knew that Jody had been in and out of detention most of her life. She had been taken to the Scared Straight program, all these different things to try to rescue her life. And it was that same detective that kept showing up in her life at these different points and warning her. And that day, he was the same one that took our daughter and put her in his detective's car in a car seat and drove away. And then they arrested us, of course, and we bonded out of jail a few days later. My daughter was placed in foster care. And when we bonded out of jail, we were trying to figure out how to get our daughter back.
Wow. So there is a lot going on, and I can't imagine the panic that you must feel having your daughter removed from Jody's arms and taken away.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, you know what? I wish I could put everything in reverse. You know, we all think when we make a mistake or we do something wrong, or we knew something we knew we shouldn't have done, you know, and we're like, I'm gonna just, if I could just do this over, and you can't do that over. And so I started having different moments of prayer, man. You know, just privately asking God the same thing anybody would ask when they get in troubles, please get me out of this. And, but you know, we've got some photos of a day that just a few days after we bonded out of jail, we got a hold of the welfare department. The welfare department had the foster care parents. We never seen them. All we know is we're supposed to go to the welfare department, be there at a certain time. They put us in this room and then they brought our baby girl in to visit with us. And we have pictures from that moment. And let's look at my wife, Jody. By that time she was, by that time she was 18, I was 19 by then, but she's holding my daughter just with mascara everywhere, you know, tears, because we really had good hearts. We were making just terrible, terrible decisions. And, but at that moment, we're just trying to figure out how to get out of trouble, how to get all this. And so over the process of the next 8 months, we both went to work. The foster care, the welfare department ended up giving my daughter to my mom. They placed her under a program called the CHINS program, which is in Indiana. That's where I'm from. That means children in need of services. So they placed her in that program, but they did give her to my mom, thank God. And so we were able to have visitation that way through my mom. In the meantime, we move out of that town. We were obviously, the welfare department made us go through different comprehensive mental health counseling. I had to do urine drops quite often. And one time I tampered with one because I've been getting high. And this was getting high on marijuana. So what they did was they knew that I had tampered with it. So they just ordered me to go back to court. And I went before a judge that was over my daughter's. He was over my daughter's case, the custody portion of it. And he scolded me a little bit. And he said, look, here's what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to order you to go to Richmond State Hospital for drug evaluation. So I go to Richmond State Hospital. When I find out, it's drug treatment. And so it wasn't a long treatment program, but it was about 36 days. And I remember being there like 3 days. In the meantime, Jody's back home. She's working two jobs. We've moved from Muncie to Indianapolis. We're trying to turn over a new leaf. We're trying to show the welfare department that these parents can be good parents. But they weren't ever going to give our daughter back because in just a few weeks, we're going to go to trial. And we just thought they would just give her back until there would, but they, I don't think they planned to do that because they never did. When I was at Richmond State Hospital, I was only there 2 or 3 days. And I told one of the counselors, I said, this is not for me. I'm not going to sit in these groups and do all this, it's just all that. I thought it was at that time. I thought, this is just stupid. I don't need to be here. All those things. And the guy looked at me and he said, is your daughter worth it? And I had already called my wife and told her to come and get me from Indianapolis to Richmond. And he said to me, is your daughter not worth it? And I said, oh, man, she is worth it. And I stayed in the program. And I'm glad I did stay in that program because I remember there were a couple times that they brought elementary students into that hospital and they asked some of us patients that were there to speak to those kids about choices. Little did I know that 15 years later, I would begin the process of speaking in public schools around America to reach over 330,000 students face to face. I didn't even know. I didn't even know I had that in me at the time. You know, you don't realize God's got these purposes and these plans in everybody's life. Sometimes you just got to dig to find them and pray. But not everybody knows to do that. And I didn't know then, but we go ahead and here, this is a really big point here for those that are listening. I think that it's just really crucial for people to understand that God will use different moments in your life to connect you with people. And those connections are just so divine and special. So we were just a few weeks out. I got out of Richmond State Hospital. I'd gotten out and my wife had been robbed at one of her jobs. It was a gas station she worked at. She'd been robbed at gunpoint twice. And I told her, I said, if you get robbed again, I'm going to make you quit. And so sure enough, one night she came home from work and her boss came home too. He came to my house as well, pulled up in the car. And I thought, she got robbed again. And she came inside and said, she got robbed a third time. I said, well, you're quitting. And so I said, she said, well, we'll go in tomorrow and we'll get my check. So we go into that gas station the next day to pick up her check because we didn't have any money. You're just broke. I mean, barely have enough money to put it in the gas tank. My mom had my daughter, thank God. And, but we go to this gas station, we're waiting and waiting and waiting. And the checks are not arriving. The mailman's not there. And finally I say to Jody, I said, hey, let's go. We got to get out of here. And I was just really rude. And, I've been on the street and I was like, let's just go. I gotta go find a job. Come on. And this guy in the gas station, he literally had just came in the gas station a few minutes before. He requested a bucket of water. He said his truck is overheating. He needed to put some water in his radiator. He comes back in that gas station while we're just standing around. And he goes, I don't know what was the problem. It's not overheating now. I don't need any water. But at the moment I said to Jody, let's go. I got to go find a job. Immediately, this man spoke up and says, you need a job? Right then. He said, you need a job. And I said, yeah, I do need a job. He said, I will hire you right now. This is in the middle of the day in this gas station. He said, I will hire you right now. I mean, who does that? You know, and he, and then he said, do you know how to do construction work? I said, I can dig a hole. I know how to use a shovel. I can do that. And over the next 10, 15 minutes, this guy saw that I was interested in this job. And we didn't know he was Christian, but later we find out he is because he starts asking us in conversation. So, hey, I can get you started. Do you have transportation? We can come to work with me tomorrow. And he said, hey, Easter's coming up. Do you guys go to church anywhere? That was his next question. He has no idea what we're facing, that we've privately been praying, asking for help, you know, to turn our situation around and keep us out of prison, get our daughter back. He has no idea. I've never met this man in my life. And as soon as he asked about going to church, of course, my wife speaks up and says, oh, that'd be so good to go to church. And I'm thinking, oh, man. But then I'm thinking, he just gave me a job, so I'm definitely going to go to church. And, man, it worked, too. It worked. And then the guy, he saw we were just listening to him, and he goes, well, hey, would you mind if my wife and I stop by your house tonight? Would you guys feel weird about that? We stop by, come by and visit with you. We'll tell you about our church and just visit with you guys. And we're like, sure. And they came to my house that night. And his wife took my wife. They ended up in the kitchen. We didn't have hardly any furniture. They end up in the kitchen. It's a really not a real great neighborhood at the time. And they end up in the kitchen, on the kitchen floor, talking about the book of Revelations. And Jody jokes that the lady's name's Diana. So Jody jokes that she scared her into following Jesus with the book of Revelation. But Jeff and I spent the rest of the time, his name's Jeff, in the living room, just talking about his church, talking about work and everything. And the next day, I went to work. And then that night, I went to the first church service with them. And man, I can tell you, we got there a little, few minutes late. The church was completely packed. It was on the south side of Indianapolis. When I got out of that vehicle, I had a red Nike t-shirt kind of ripped up a little bit, old pair of work pants, and somehow I'd gotten hold of some work shoes or something. And I remember I had my hat on. I did take my hat off and leave it in the car. We go inside this church and we're feeling like needles sticking in our body all over. It's just like, this is so foreign for us to be in here. And these people are like singing loudly. They got tambourines. They're dancing. I'm not kidding you. They're like dancing in this church. And sure enough, we're in the back thinking, we'll just stand in the back. We'll stand in the back. Everybody's standing. Nobody can see us. Somehow we spotted that couple. They were on the front row. And when we seen them, they seen us. And they invited my wife and I. They waved for us to come to the front, and they had saved us seats in the front row. And all I can say is that over the next few weeks, every time we'd go to that church, which was every time that door was open for a service, we kept going back. But we kept going back because he gave me a job. And every time we went, Jody and I would look at each other and we would say, we're not coming back here again. This is crazy. We'd say, job or no job. And right in the middle of the service, I'd lean over and whisper in her ear, job or no job, we're not coming back. Did you know within 3 weeks, I was playing the tambourine in that church? True story.
Which, by the way, is one of the harder instruments to play.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah. And they were just letting that thing float around in the where the congregation was at. So, and here's the crazy thing. I had no idea that the pastor of this church was also a sheriff's deputy. And of course, it was a different town that I was in trouble in. So I never said anything to this pastor or anybody in this church about what we were facing. Only that couple knew about it. We told them. And they kept praying over us and everything. And then we go to trial and they found us guilty. And they didn't find any drugs, only paraphernalia when they raided my house. But what they did find was a lot of stolen property. And me and Jody are not going to cooperate because I'm so worried about my reputation. And we go to trial. We get found guilty. They threw us back in jail again. And then our sentencing is coming up within a couple of weeks. And when we go to sentencing, did you know that that couple, that man that I'd only worked for about 5 weeks, he came to sentencing. He wanted to be a character witness for me.
Wow.
He told his pastor. His pastor's name is Walt Bollinger. And I think Walt lives in Florida now. But anyway, And he's, of course, retired from the sheriff's department. But this pastor goes, well, I want to go be a character witness for that. I mean, this guy's a sheriff's deputy, and he doesn't even hardly know us. But he knew that God had a plan for us. And the guy was just really sensitive to the fact that God must have something for this couple. So I'll never forget him showing up. They said, can he come and be a character witness? He wants to do it. And I called him from the jail, and they told me that. And I said, yes, of course, anybody. And he walked up there with his Bible to the stand, and he told the judge, when he said, Your Honor, I've only two or three times in 15 years have I ever taken the stand as a character witness in for someone. And he looked right at me and he said, I got to tell you, Your Honor, I would give Mr. Ballinger the keys to my house. That was his exact words.
Wow. George doesn't even tell me where his house is. We've been friends for 15 years. That's crazy. All right, Billy, let me take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We're going to come back and hear exactly more of what happened to Billy. Sentenced to prison and then what? We'll be right back.
Listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
We are back with Real Recovery. Bill and George. Our story tonight is Billy Ballinger. What a story. Amazing. He, despite having some great character witnesses and a strong support team, the judge still said, boy, you got a lot of stolen merchandise. I think you need to spend some time in government housing. And he and his wife both headed toward prison. Billy, let's talk about that. What was that like?
Oh, man, I can vividly remember that day when she gave us the sentence. First offense as an adult, she gave each of us 6 years. And they took Jody out of the room, took me out the other way. And, you know, I just, by that time, I'd been in jail for a little bit, and I just started really, really reaching out to God, you know. And, yeah, I always say this when I'm have an opportunity to share this. Don't criticize the family members who are in prison and start talking about God. Because this is good. I mean, people accuse them of having jailhouse religion. I'm like, well, that's exactly what it is, but it doesn't mean it's not real, you know? And when I got incarcerated, I did time in four different prisons during the time I was incarcerated. Jody did her time in two different prisons. And I was heartbroken because I couldn't be with her, couldn't hold her. It felt like I ruined our life. Thankfully, my mom had my daughter. While in prison, we signed custody of my daughter over to my mom. And so here we go. We go off to prison. But thank God, again, God puts these people in your life. When I got to the Indiana State Prison at Michigan City, it was a maximum security facility. I was only in maximum security for a few days before they put me out at a place called K-Dorm. And there were some lifers that basically ran that part of the prison. And this guy, I was actually asking, hey, do you guys know where a Bible study is? Is there any type of a Bible study? And they said, go talk to this guy over there. And I went over there, and this guy stood up, and he was 6'5", black brother named, his name's, we call him Slim, but his name's Robert Nelson. And man, this dude, he glowed. I'm not kidding you. Like, I felt like he just, you know, he was like an angel, you know, and he had been the baddest dude in the whole prison, but he took me under his wing. He had gotten born again, following Jesus. Nobody messed with him. And he was on fire, and he took me under his wing and began to teach me about Jesus. But he just didn't teach me about, you know, Bible stories, stuff like that I learned in Sunday school. He was telling me that God was powerful. He was telling me God would answer my prayers. And one thing real quick I want to tell you, the prison was not letting me write my wife letters. And so you can file this form and try to get it okayed, and they weren't letting it happen. So we kept praying. We kept filing these modifications. And I told, or trying, not a modification, it was trying to get approval to write my wife from my prison to her prison. And I told Slim, I said, Slim, I gotta get a letter to my wife legally, because the way we were doing it, I would write her a letter. I would put it inside of a letter to my mom. I would mail that to my mom, and my mom would mail my wife the letter. So Slim said, you know what we need to do? We need to pray and we need to fast. So tomorrow we're going to fast three meals. And I'm instantly thinking, people might think this is crazy, but that prison that I was at, the one that was ran by the inmates, they had really great food. I got to throw that in. But Slim said, we're going to be fasting tomorrow. I'd never fasted in my life. And I was like, okay, so three meals. All right. He said, stay in the scriptures. We're going to fast and pray that they will let you write your wife. We fasted breakfast. We fasted lunch. At about 3 PM, they did mail call. And I'm telling you, as I'm sitting right here, they did mail call and they called my name and they had a letter that had been sent from my wife that they released. And I got the letter the same day that we were fasting.
Wow.
And I opened the letter. I still have the picture today. Somebody had taken a picture of her in the visiting room at her prison. And somehow she was able to send that. And she said it was in the letter. I used to keep that picture right in the front of my Bible. But I went over and I told Slim, I said, look, man, look, it worked. It worked. He goes, good. We can eat. And that was like seeing the miraculous, you know. And I spent just a couple months there. I went to another prison, 8 months in that prison, and then another prison for another 13 months. But here's what was happening to me. I remember Slim had given me a scripture. He said, I don't know why I'm giving you this scripture. He says, God wants me to give you this, I believe. I don't know why, but here it is. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 1. It says, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and like the rivers of water, God will turn it the way he wants it to go. And so all through the prison time, I'm starting to read my Bible. I'm studying the Bible. I'm learning more about God. I'm walking around the prison yard praying, asking God to get me out of prison to restore my relationship with my wife. I mean, restore us together as a family with our daughter. My wife is fired up for God. She did that for about the first year. And then she just really got mad at God because she's like missing her freedom and her daughter and her husband. And she testifies to that today, you know. But what God had me do was he had me continue to write her and encourage her in the scriptures and pray that God would restore our family. Of course, there was some inmates that said, how can you pray that? Because, you know, God's got you in prison to, you know, look, he's using you. He's using you to minister to other inmates. And I just told those guys, I said, I can have a prison ministry from the outside. I didn't have to be locked up. However, I will point out that being incarcerated, that was like a cocoon. I just saturated myself in the word and began to learn about Jesus. And what happened was I was praying and asking God to get me out and studying the scriptures to try to get Jesus to answer my prayers. And then guess what? I fell in love with Jesus is what happened. I got in the word and fell in love with him. And after 23 months, the judge had told us, quit asking to get out. You're going to do all your time. Quit. She said, don't waste the paper. Don't waste the ink. You are going to do all your time. Because we kept asking, sending modifications in. And when the judge said that, I went out and prayed at my prison that night. And I remember telling God, God, I didn't pray to that judge. I prayed to you. And your word says, if any man be in Christ, you know, and I quoted that scripture and I'm praying to God. I'm not trying to talk God into something. I'm not trying to boss him around. I'm realizing that God truly changed me. And I told the Lord, I said, Lord, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, I will never return to drugs. I will never return to that life because he had so changed me.
Yeah. You know, Billy, I want to do a part two if we can, because we're not even halfway through your story and we're already out of time.
Yes, of course.
Do we have permission to do that? Can you make that time for us to do part two?
I would love to.
All right, George, riveting story. That's all the time we have for tonight, but we're going to ask Billy back because the rest of his story is spectacular. So there's the cliffhanger. We'll have him back and we'll get part two of the story, but that's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you so much for being with us here on Real Recovery. If you missed any of it, you want to go to Real Recovery on our show page and hear it from the beginning. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.